Ag Today presents your Purdue Extension, a podcast network. A podcast partnership between Purdue University Extension and Indiana's most listened to farm radio network, Hoosier Ag Today.
Hello and welcome to 4-H4U, a podcast from the Hoosier Ag Today presents your Purdue Extension Podcast Network, and the show where we dive into the stories, ideas, and people shaping Indiana's youth. I'm your host, Greg Allen, and today we're exploring a cornerstone of youth development in the Hoosier State, the Indiana 4-H program. With roots stretching across all 92 counties, through the work of Purdue Extension, 4-H in Indiana isn't just about livestock and barns. It's about preparing young people to lead, innovate, and contribute in their communities. In particular, we're shining the spotlight on one of its lesser-known but powerful pathways, the Discovery Programs. The 4-H Discovery Challenge, for instance, brings grades 3 through 6 into classrooms with structure, mentorship, and project-based exploration in topics like science, environmental stewardship, healthy living, and in leadership. So whether you're a parent curious about what 4-H can offer, a volunteer looking for fresh ideas, or simply someone who cares about building tomorrow's leaders, we're going to unpack how these programs work, who's involved, and what the real impact looks like in Indiana. To help us do that, we have 4-H educator for Discovery Programs, Bill Decker. How you doing, Bill?
Doing great. Happy to be here.
Well, we're glad that you decided to join us today. And I think we should just jump right into it. Why don't we just start with what are the Discovery Programs?
Sure. Well, they're a little bit diverse in a way. The biggest part of the Discovery Programs is Discovery Challenge. And that's the program where we're going into local schools, we're working with kids, teaching them how to do basic research, good research versus bad research, good sources versus good sources, and getting them to put together a presentation. Usually that's on Google Slides. If they don't have that, of course, we can still use good old-fashioned posters and tape if we need to. And then actually doing that presentation for their class. So it's what you would be used to with a normal 4-H'er doing a normal project at fair. But this is in classroom with all the kids in the class. It's not a 4-H club. It's not an after-school program. And we're working with those kids multiple years to try to really build up those soft skills of presentation skills, being comfortable talking to small audiences, big audiences, and really working on their self-confidence.
So what grades is this for? Is this program for?
Right now, we're in the classrooms at 3 through 6. Next year, we'll hit the 7th grade. The year after that, we'll hit the 8th grade. You get the idea. We're heading all the way through high school eventually. And the program changes slightly as we go. When we start in 3rd grade, we really are assigning students a subject. It's either national parks or scientists and engineers. And in 3rd grade, we really just help them learn how to do the presentation and how not to plagiarize and how to summarize. By 4th and 5th grade, we let them pick anything that's school appropriate, and unless the teacher has a different idea. And again, we're working again on them starting from scratch there. We're trying to explain, we can't trust everything on the internet. What can we trust? Where do we look for good sources? And still working on those presentation techniques, still working on the backgrounds we might do on slides. Same thing in 5th. By 6th grade, we start using the Indiana Career Explorer, and we start working at actual careers the kids are maybe looking at. So the last minute of their presentation has to be on a career, and we're looking at everything from paid education and figuring that if we can do that through the 6 years, 6th through 12th grade, either hopefully they'll find something that sparks their interest and they want to go into, or they'll find 6 careers they don't want to go into, and frankly, we're still ahead. I used to teach high school, and I had a lot of high school seniors coming out without a clue what they didn't even want to do, much less what they wanted to do. And so we're working on that. And of course, hopefully in high school, we'll be able to have them in their presentation show some of the skills. So if they're doing culinary arts, maybe they'll be able to actually cook something for the judges and do that in a home economics room or home economy room or something like that.
I used to teach high school as well.
Really?
What subject? Ed Center. Oh. Logan Sport, yeah.
That's one of my certifications, technology ed.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I taught TV and radio at the CTE program there in Logansport, and it was fantastic. So ideally, this program could take a third grader all the way up.
Absolutely. All the way to high school and beyond. You know, we're pushing hard with the Beyond Ready curriculum in 4-H now. The idea is really have them ready to go into whatever they're going to go into coming out of 12th grade, and maybe even before that. You know, we're splintering up, working with another chunk of our program, Next Chapter, and we're even starting right now a program where kids will be able to, in their junior or senior year, apply for some funds to take a digital badge program at Purdue in agriculture agronomy. And by the time they graduate, they would actually have their professional certificate in agronomy coming out of high school, probably That's putting excellent. Them in a good position to make some money.
And of course, this is further reaching than just Indiana. We're focusing on Indiana today, but what are the counties that this program is currently located in?
Sure. You know, right now we're 9 counties in the state, and we're expanding those kind of as we go. It's been growing kind of like a plant, you know, in the directions where the sunlight seems to be the best, I guess. And so right now we're Decatur, Hancock, Henry, Jackson, Lake, Madison, Pulaski, Ripley, and Stark. So basically, you know, all the way up in the corner of the state with the Great Lakes. And Jackson, we're getting down fairly south, but we want to get down more into the south and catch more of that. And we really would like to be in all the counties in the state within the next few years. This is only the second year of the program. So we're pretty happy to be in those 9 counties and have programs in them. I wish I could say we were hitting every student in those counties. We're not yet. You know, just in Madison County. Yet. That's absolutely it. It's yet. In Madison County, you know, one of our bigger school systems here, we're only in one school there, but you know, you got to pilot it somewhere and make sure everybody's happy with it, and then expand. Absolutely.
Madison County is actually where I live, in Anderson.
Oh, well, and that's where I'm at right now.
Oh, is that right? Well, we could have gotten together and done this, I guess.
Yeah, just on the north side of Anderson.
This is fantastic that you actually take this program to the schools. How does the program relate to Indiana academic standards?
Well, it's related in 2 ways. We have the academic standards that really relate to English and communications. And you can see how the research skills, the presentation skills would be related to those. And so I would say that's where the biggest chunk of the program really stands right now. But then again, as I mentioned, in 6th grade and beyond, we're getting into a lot of the workforce standards. And, you know, getting kids to understand what it's like to, you know, pursue a degree if they want to go that direction. What opportunities are there without pursuing a degree? You know, so those workforce standards and the English standards are the 2 that we're really hitting pretty hard on. But in the elementary schools, where they love us right now, is really knocking out some of those speech and communication standards. A lot of the times, teachers will be left to do that alone. And, you know, to work and have 25, 30 kids in the classroom do a 4 or 5 minute speech and then have to grade them. That's very time consuming for the teacher. So a lot of times we're able to do those in libraries, in library rotations, and we can save all that time for the teacher and still help them meet the standards. We've had some great teachers that have decided to even, you know, help the kids outside of the library, put their stuff together. So it's a team effort. But again, right now we're really hitting those English standards hard, but we are starting to work on the workforce and career standards also.
That's excellent. And let's say that an administrator or a school teacher is watching this program right now. How does it work for them? What kind of time commitment does the school need to make in order to host the Discovery Challenge program? How do they get involved in doing it?
Right. Well, to get involved, that's very easy. That's a simple email to me. So I know it says Bill Decker at the bottom of the screen, and that's my name. But my email is W. Decker, William Decker. So wdecker@purdue.edu, simple email, state the interest, the grade level, we'll get together, we'll talk, we'll figure it out. The time commitment, it really does vary. Again, if we're able to do it in something like a library rotation, the time commitment, again, is really more at the library than the in-classroom teacher. But we also are doing it in classrooms also. So we visit the classroom about 4 times every semester. and work with the kids on those things like we were talking about, you know, how to do good research, how to speak so they can hear you in the back of the room. Believe it or not, that's a problem with our elementary school kids. We know if they're out in the playground, we can hear them for 5 miles. But if they're in a classroom, sometimes that voice doesn't make it to the back. So we're working on all those skills, helping them with the research, helping them put together some slides. And we do that 4 times. We then come back, and most classrooms, it's taking us 3 to 4 times to actually be able to have time to judge the student presentations. And that would look a lot like a 4-H judging if people are used to that. The students do it in front of the class. There's a judge or two sitting there with the infamous rubric. We're going through it. The kids who are above grade level in expectations, they get their blue ribbon. The kids that are right at grade level are getting their red ribbon. And the kids that still need to do some work are getting a white ribbon, but they're really encouraged by that. It's not that you've failed by any stretch of the imagination, because we always tell them, if you get up and you speak in front of a crowd, you've won. We're just, you know, giving you where you can grow from. If you have a white, let's work for a red or blue next year, and let's look at how we could have made our stuff better. So that, you know, it can take up to 8 visits, which is a big chunk of time in a school teacher administrator's quiver. But at the same time, if they're having to do speech and research presentations with the kids, they're going to be spending that time anyhow. So we're trying not to add to their burdens. We're trying to help them out and have another body or two in the room that can help.
And what a cool way for not only respite for that teacher or for that, you know, teacher's aide, but also what a great way to introduce kids to 4-H and get them involved and you know, maybe even the ones that have never even heard or connected with 4-H.
Absolutely. You know, the kids who get the reds and the blues right now, we're encouraging to come to a district competition. It's not required at all. The kids who get the whites, we still encourage them too, but we remind them it's going to take a lot of work before you go to district from a white. You're going to need to do a lot more work. But we don't ever cut anybody off and say you can't come. That's not where we're at. But we're getting them to district competition to see other schools, to compete against them. And all those students become full 4-H club members at that time, because the minute they move out of the classroom, they're a club member for a lot of reasons. And so then it's opened up that they can do any 4-H project and go to the fair and all of that, and they're club members, they're ready to go. And, you know, when you look at 4-H projects, there's essentially hundreds of them if you look at everything we can do in every division under it. So there's almost always something there to interest a kid. And as you mentioned, you know, speaking at what you did in the classroom and what we're doing with this project, there's always communications projects. You can have a student who has no interest in livestock, no interest in anything agricultural, no interest in STEM, because, you know, 4-H is largely STEM these days. But they can still go out there and do communications projects and be part of 4-H in the community.
Very neat. Bill, we're going to take a short break here, but when we come back to 4-H4U, we'll talk about how this program works as a hands-on for students and how the program is funded, so stay tuned.
The average American reaches for their mobile phone about 350 times a day. For Indiana farmers, that number is probably higher, as the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app keeps them updated on the latest markets, weather, and farm news information. If you haven't downloaded this free app, you're missing out on a powerful and portable resource. The Hoosier Ag Today mobile app can be downloaded at the Apple Store and Google Play, and at HoosierAgToday.com. The Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
We're back with 4-H4U and talking today with 4-H educator for Discovery Programs, Bill Decker. Bill, thanks again for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
We've been talking about this incredible program, and we've been talking about it from more of a teaching side and how administrators and educators can get involved. How does it work on a student side of things? What do students do? How do they pick their presentation subjects? How do they get involved?
Well, you know, again, in third grade, we kind of dump on them, and they have a hat. They pull out a national park, or they pull out an engineer or a scientist, and we already have a lot of things ready to go. Of course, national parks, we take them to the national park website and show them all the tabs and where they can pull things from. So, you know, they're really just there to learn to speak to the back of the room, to put things on a slide, how not to plagiarize, and those really basic skills of doing a presentation. By fourth and fifth, again, we're allowing them to pick their topics. We have a long chat on what's school appropriate. You know, again, if the principal's walking in while you're doing your presentation and you're going to be embarrassed, it's probably not school appropriate. So we have those conversations with them, and we double check and make sure that they're following our advice, counseling them a little bit that way. And then, of course, you know, they're working with us in the classroom, and they have the opportunity working outside the classroom. A lot of teachers will, if they have extra time in a period, something came up and they got 15 minutes into the period, they can just turn to the kid and say, hey, we know you're doing your 4-H project. We know you're doing Discovery Challenge. So, you know, go ahead and take 15 minutes to do a little research or find some better photos, work on your slides. So again, it's that kind of team management of the project with the kids. But the kids have months really to put this together, and that's teaching them some time management, because a lot of time at the beginning, they think that, you know, Christmas will never come. And all of a sudden they're doing their presentation right before Christmas, and it's like, wow, how did that get here already? Or just after Christmas. So we're working on the time management with them too. But from a kid's standpoint, it's mostly done at school. We realize that some of them don't have the resources to do it at home. But you know, those who want to continue on and do it at home or do it on their own time are welcome to do so also.
And then what kind of aids can they use? Visual aids, practical aids, what can they use?
We're trying to keep it kind of basic, and some of the schools that just don't have the funding, not going to name a couple counties because that wouldn't be fair, but there's some counties that the schools just don't have one-on-one computers, or they've decided that's not a good idea at a certain age, which I certainly respect. We're working on, we bring in the posters and the markers and the tape, and you know, allow kids to print stuff off and put together posters and have that be their presentation. Somebody might think that's way, you know, 20th century or 19th century, but I'll testify at the university, we still do a lot of poster presentations as adults. So that's perfectly fine. But again, since they're working over months, it's a lot easier if they do have access to computer, that we're just going on to Google Slides usually, which is, you know, a free program available to anybody with a computer. And it's a lot like PowerPoint, and they're putting together a lot of their presentations there. And then once we get to sixth grade, we switch out and they're going to Google Sites, and they're putting together a full website, and we're teaching them how to do that. And honestly, we're tricking them, so hopefully they're not watching this right now. We wanted to have them journal, and the minute we mentioned journaling to a middle school child or high school kid, they glaze over and want to fall in a hole. So. We're having new websites, and every year they're doing a new website. And so the old website stays intact. It's archived. It becomes a journal of what they've done over the years, and they just don't realize they're journaling. So this is the first year we're trying that. We just had our first school have the kids present their sites, and I think it's going to work out really, really well. You know, we're going through a couple of growing pains here, but I think it's going to go great. The kids were excited about it. You know, hey, they've been doing slides all these years. They got to learn something new and apply it. And it's something that if they want to, the school allows it, they can actually, you know, post their site for the public. But we asked them at least in sixth grade not to do that, because obviously they don't need to have a lot about themselves posted out there on the internet right now. But, yeah. You know, it's something that they could certainly take with them. It doesn't stay at the school. It's there for them to look back on 50 years from now if they want to.
Now, obviously, there are costs involved with the Discovery programs. Is that something the school pays for? How is the program funded?
Right now, we're blessed. Lily has come forth, Lil Endowment, has funded three kind of school-based programs within 4-H right now for the next year or so. And so right now we're going to the schools. We also have a little program, side program, I kind of call it, called Discovery in the Classroom, that is funded where we'll go out and launch rockets with the kids. We'll do STEM projects that don't require these presentations. And it, you know, if a school wants a launch pad and materials and all that, we actually buy that for them right now. which is awesome. We realize that that kind of funding will come to an end, sooner than we want. But, I'm such saying great things about Lilly. Without them, we could have never gotten this off the ground. So we're going to be looking for community support. And that community support looks like, we figured it out. It's about $18 per student to be in the program. So if we're reaching 100 kids, it's about $1,800. Hmm. And so we are, looking over this next year at, different places. It probably won't be your typical, we probably won't go to community foundations. We probably won't be necessarily applying for as many grants as you'd expect. Of course, they're kind of overwhelmed right now. The grant side in the world seems to be getting about five times as many grants as they were not too long ago. And so, what we're actually looking for is going to be, old-fashioned donors. Does somebody want to support 10 kids? Well, it's $180. We're not going crazy. We're not looking for the millions. We're looking for the tens of dollars to keep it going and expand it as we go. And there are some schools that are pretty happy with it and are kind of taking it over from us and, using their resources to do it, one in Hancock County specifically. And so it becomes very inexpensive to offer the program there when all of a sudden the school starts taking the lead in it.
Well, if a school isn't ready to commit to the full Discovery Challenge program, is there anything else that might help them reach state standards?
Right, absolutely. Like I say, we have the Discovery in the Classroom. So for every grade that we've put out to the public right now, which is 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, we've put together at least 4 STEM projects that, if we're lucky and there's some resources in your county, if a 4-H educator can come in and do them, they're great. They're, again, tied to the state standards for STEM in that level. And if 4-H educator can't come out, again, they're ones that we can actually help buy the equipment or supplies for. And those go from everything to, we do one on cover crops. It's kind of fun. We do rubber band powered aircraft, rubber band powered cars. Again, we do some drones, we do some rockets. I mean, you name it, we're doing it. And those aren't huge commitments. Those are one day in a classroom or two or three at most. And it's just really to help, especially the teachers hit another science standard, bring somebody from the outside in, because we all know however good the teacher is, sometimes that outside person gets the kids' attention a little bit more. I think I found that when I was teaching. So we're still there to help where we can. So next year we'll also roll out some more resources in 7th and then 8th and then down the road. More and more in that Discovery in the classroom area.
And Bill, you gave your email on how people can reach out and get in touch with you. But if somebody just wants to learn more about the program, is there a place that they can go?
Yeah, it's actually pretty easy. Normally I'd be spewing out a huge, long list of letters for an HTTP, et cetera. But if you just go and you type in Purdue 4-H Discovery, probably the first or second thing that comes up on the top of your search will be Discovery Programs. And at the top, it's going to show the Discovery Challenge. You can even look at the mentor manuals. Everything's there. It's all forward-facing. We don't hide anything. And then down at the bottom, we have all those one-day, two-day, three-day projects. Click. And if you want to look at the rocket program or something like that, you'll have pictures of how we even build the rocket and everything else that goes into it, along with the state standards. So those are always there.
4-H educator for Discovery Programs, Bill Decker, thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through Indiana 4-H and its Discovery Programs. We've seen how from classroom-based research and presentations in grades 3 through 6 to broader opportunities for older youth, 4-H is more than just clubs. It's a pathway for growth, discovery, and community impact. If you're watching or listening and you'd like to learn more, whether you're a young person, a parent, a teacher, or a potential volunteer, I encourage you to reach out to your local county extension office, explore the 4-H website, and see how you might plug in. In Indiana, 4-H is available in every county, thanks to Purdue Extension's statewide reach and partnerships. And remember, at its heart, 4-H is about more than projects or competitions. It's about equipping young people with life skills like clearer thinking, greater loyalty, responsible hands, and healthier living for their communities and the world beyond. So whatever your role, there's a way to engage and help make the best better. Until next time, I'm Greg Allen, and this has been 4-H4U, a podcast from the Hoosier Ag Today presents your Purdue Extension Podcast Network. Thanks for listening, and keep discovering.